It's A Couple Cooks, the podcast with Sonia and Alex Overheiser. We're a couple on a mission to find the tastiest, good-for-you eats you can make in your kitchen. Because the way we eat can make a meaningful difference.
Join us as we chase after real good food through stories, recipes, and conversations about cooking at home and eating well. Welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're glad you're here. If you're a regular listener to the A Couple Cooks podcast, we'd appreciate it if you headed over to your podcast app or iTunes store and gave us a rating. Those ratings really help new people find the show, so we would really appreciate it. Today on the show, we are talking to Chris Bianco. He's kind of the OG artisan pizza man, doing wood-fired pizzas since the 80s. If you thought that artisan pizzas were a new trendy thing, he can tell you nope. They have been around for ages, and he makes some of the best in the world.
He's basically the grandfather of artisan pizza here in the States, and he owns a few locations of the restaurant Bianco, which is out in Phoenix, as well as a couple other restaurants. He's a James Beard Award winner, and his pizzas have been lauded from everyone, from Mario Batali to Ruth Reichel.
And his new cookbook, Bianco, would not let you know all of those accolades because it's simple and straightforward. And I love the subtitle, Pizza, Pasta, and Other Food I Like.
Right. So there's a little bit of everything in there.
And he's just kind of sharing his thoughts and his love for food.
And as with all great chefs, he is more than willing to talk philosophy and get deep into the way that we eat, how we cook for other people, and what makes something truly simple. Chris Bianco, welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm grateful to be here.
So with a name like Bianco, am I correct in thinking you might have some Italian roots?
Yeah, you know, I think everybody kind of goes to Italy at one point of their existence on this planet. According to like your 23andMe, I think we're pretty much all have a piece of that in there. But yeah, my grandparents... My grandparents are all from Italy on both sides and landed in New York. And I serendipitously somehow was a happy accident, I'm sure, along the way.
So you were growing up in New York in an Italian family. And did you grow up cooking traditional Italian food?
You know what? I was born in 62. I'm kind of old. So, I mean, the 60s were an interesting... they were an interesting time to be on this planet for a lot of reasons, but there was much change in our world going on, you know, somewhat like today. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, I think political confusion and you know, assassinations and wars coming on and, you know, a lot of things going on in the peripheral. So I think it was interesting. Like it wasn't like an incredible amount of Italian pride that was, you know, like people look at their, essentially their heritage is like we do today. I mean, I knew it was Italian, but I pretty much thought everybody kind of was. It was really my, you know, I mean, I saw a lot of diversity in New York, but I still thought everyone was kind of Italian or at least ate Italian food. You know, in our home, my mom, who's an amazing cook, and my aunts, and they all had, roots in what was at one time very traditional dishes, and maybe, you know, they might have kind of gilded a lily along the way, you know, just to maybe they were without ingredients that were not available, you know, back in Italy. And as all great immigrants do, you adapt. And so it was, there was always some type of connection to Italy, even subconsciously or not, in all our food for sure.
So you grew up with that great background of traditional cooking, and then somehow you ended up in Phoenix. And I read in your book, in the beginning of your book, you're in the back of a grocery store making pizza. So connect me to those two things.
Yeah, sure. When I moved to Phoenix, it was like 85. I started a little catering business, which is basically making mozzarella at my apartment and also fresh pasta. And then I would do pizza parties at people's homes. And you know, I'd show up with my little baking stone and it was kind of a low budget dinner theater where I'd make your dinner and you'd have cocktails. And, you know, if maybe your significant other was less significant, you know, you'd have something to distract you from that time, in the kitchen. So it was a neat experience, and I met someone that hired me, a guy named Guy Cascas, to do a party for him, a cool French name. He bought a grocery store that he transformed into a super hipster for the 80s place called the Euro Market. And he leased me 300 square feet, which became the first Pizzeria Bianco, which opened in 88. And the rest is a checkered past of history now.
I was going to say, were there hipsters back in the 80s?
Well, it was all relative. I mean, they have everyone has their perceived hipster. They just said it was just the hipsters, but with a mullet kind of thing.
And in that process, I think I remember reading, too, that you ended up going over to Italy to spend some time and eat some of the traditional food and do some research on the pizza you were making.
Yeah, I did. I'm always, research is always a big thing. But the biggest part of the research is more of developing, your palate. I think that, when people say, how'd you learn to cook? It was really first learning to eat first and learning to recognize what I liked about food and understand food history. It's a little bit, I think, like if you want to become, I never consider what I do art, but if I did have a penchant to become an artist, and that was my path, it's studying, I think studying all types of art, see which, what moves you, and then hopefully have a respect for all types of different arts. I mean, for me, going back to Italy was a place where I could, kind of connect with the authentic, the connect intention of, you find out that maybe some of those dishes that you had in Italy, I mean, in New York growing up, were more Italian-American. It's still good, of good integrity, but maybe they had a different flavor profile or ingredient, or we weren't really blessed with, in the 60s and 70s especially, I think the hyperness or the consciousness to the seasons and things, which were never out of place in Italy. They were always part of kind of social consciousness. And so I think being my aunt, I stayed with the actually my great aunt, who just recently passed away. She lived in very close to Casa San Angelo, which is close to the Campofiore Market. Mm-hmm. And I'd stay there and walk there and just watch, the artichoke lady, trim artichokes so you could take them home. And they would give you a recipe for, if you wanted to do Carciofi alla Giudea or Roman style artichokes or whatever, that you have this incredible insight from the people that grew the food or were just a part of that process. So it was, it did definitely help me just connect the dots to something as a youth that maybe I was intrigued by, why I started or what I liked about cooking, was always, it helped me with my own insecurity, finding something that, can make other people happy. And that was a kind of a helpful path for me, where, as studying to be more of a chef was always based on, let me eat as much deliciousness as I can, and let me find out what I like about those things, and see if I can show them, a proper sense of respect, if not, by a full interpretation of them, by paying homage to them in an aspect that I thought would be important,
I love what you said about learning how to eat. And I think that's something that even in the 2000s, my husband Alex and I experienced when we went over to Italy. Even in the early 2000s, there wasn't a lot of authentic seasonal food going on where we were living. And we were able to go and learn how to eat as well. We went to Rome, and then came back a few years later and went to Naples and had one of the best pizzas we've ever had in our lives and said, we have to recreate this.
I think that's the whole thing. I mean, that's the, you know, kind of going places and seeing where you, and then kind of identifying it. I mean, I went through some similar things in Italy, you know, which, whether it was in Rome or in Naples or, you know, years later going back to, you know, like to go to Provence or, you know, seeing what they do with pizza there, which is awesome also. But what gives me a lot of freedom now or with young cooks now is I'm always like, you know, forget what I'm telling you, you know, like learn to trust your own palate, learn to trust what you love about food. You know, I say before, you know, the thing about Naples is like, you know, the minute you step out, you know, into the next province or out of that city, it becomes an homage to it. I mean, it stops for me being, you know, it starts being an homage and stops being, you know, you're so shackled to a tradition. So, you know, you can say that, okay, well, I love it, but I'd like it a little bit crisper. I'd like it to have a little bit more, you know, I'd love to try it with, you know, this flour variety. So you might take elements that you love about it. And this is the thing. I think there's one thing to be influenced and inspired by a tradition in any culture. And then there's another thing to believe that that's the only way to do it. And I think it's just like with people, you know, it's like to respect diversity in your food is similar to respecting diversity in humanity. I think that, you know, there's a lot of parallels that usually are metaphorically have another side to it. You know, it's never usually about, you know, just the way we cook. I think usually sometimes it's the way, you know, those principles, you know, can apply in a lot of different ways, for me anyway. So when I was in Italy, like, I love so many things about it, but I know the most Italian thing that I could do was use things that were from my backyard, use things that were in season, use things that, you know, were as local as possible and of good integrity. It wasn't about just, I'm going to FedEx, you know, whatever over and recreate this illusion that we're in, you know, we're in Tuscany or in Naples when we're not. But if you can identify what was special about those things, you can now have a special experience in Asheville, North Carolina, or Atlanta, Georgia, or New York City, or Albania, wherever you are. You can take elements that have really, you know, are without ownership other than, a respect to, you know, what makes good things good.
I think a great example of that in your cookbook is your Pizza Rossa, which you mentioned you had in Italy, and I believe it had, was it sesame seeds on it?
Yeah, sesame
seeds,
that is correct.
Yeah, and so you wanted to recreate it back at home in Arizona, and it just wasn't tasting the same, and so you mentioned in your head notes that you decided to use pistachios instead of sesame because that's what was available to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting, like where I had that one pizza, was in Fino Ligure in Liguria, and it was a little focacceria that did these one half the menu was just salumi and prosciutto, that there was two sons and then the father did all the salumi, so you'd order these very simple focaccia, and this one that I had with grana and sesame was super simple, and you got it with a plate of whatever, you know, deer prosciutto or whatever that was the star of the moment there, and it was transcending. It was special. But when I got back, I was, you know, my initial thought was, you know, first thing I thought probably in an instant was, even though I saw sesame seeds with Italian bread my whole life, you know, the first time I really saw that in a focaccia or pizza, and I started to think about it as I researched, you know, in sesame, you know, sesame seeds, and, you know, really coming from you know, from the East originally and through Asia. So when I got back, you know, to Arizona, well, there's three things that are in large production here, you know, durum wheat, pecans, and pistachio. And in the southern part of the state, we grow some of the finest pistachios on the planet. I mean, they're fantastic and meaty and delicious. And at that time, I wasn't really aware of that until I researched it. You know, I just, at that time, you know, recently moved to Arizona. if they were optimum, maybe, and I took them down and I kind of, you know, kind of put them in a mortar and pestle and gave them, you know, a little bit of a bump and kind of broke them down somewhat, that it would give me a similar textural experience, but also something that was just appropriate because of our demographic or where we were in the world. And I think that's part of it is wherever I am in the world, like, I mean, I want to see what you have. Like, I want to, like, whatever I am, you know, I want to, you know, whatever that part of this planet is blessed with, and is bountiful and is optimum, you know, that's what I'm not going to be bringing. I don't want to bring my own lunch, you know, just because, you know, I want to submit what the best the world has to offer. And usually people, sometimes in the most humble conditions, are able to provide these experiences because they're tuned into that. Either they grow it or wait for it in season, and through generations they make some very incredibly special experiences that we can share.
You have a quote in your pizza margarita recipe that I think might be getting at some of what you're saying here. You say, to me, food is about identity and place and relationships, and how the best food happens when we begin with an attention and work from a place of attention.
It is that way where you know, if you go to your kitchen tonight, you know, what is your intention? To make something for yourself, someone you love, your child, you know, your neighbors are coming over, or like in the restaurant business, rooms full of people over and over again, repetitiously. So I think when you said, you know, when you understand the intention, the task at hand, your cooking medium, your ingredients, restrictions or bounty, when you start to check all those boxes, I think those ultimately, you know, either confirm or deny your opportunity to do something special. You know, if you go with this recipe, that you've got this amazing recipe, a place that the ingredients are compromised, or, you know, and you make this dish that doesn't move you, it might not be the recipe's fault. You know, it's a little bit like, I use this example a lot, but it makes the most sense, which is in architecture. Like, the greatest architecture for me is not ones that say, you know, I know what's the best house. You just tell me when you want to move in and I'll build you the best house in the world. The best architecture is ones that download all that is important to you. You know, your necessities, you know, are there special needs people? Oh, you know, what's the weather like in your area? You know, what are the components that will make this house special for you? And then you can build something, you know, from that place. And I think cooking food is really very much like that, where, you know, if it's yourself, it's a pretty clear path of what you want. You wake up at midnight, you're craving a grilled cheese, you know how you like it, you did it. But if someone asks you to make the greatest sandwich in the world or the greatest anything in the world, the first thing, you know, hopefully we should do is kind of download what the expectation of the diner in some form. You know, like if we've been clear and the restaurateur or the person that's hungry coming to your house is coming to your kitchen, you know, as much as we can, we should, hey, what are you allergic to? What don't you like? And, you know, let us go from that point. And I think that kind of helps. It helps the experience. It definitely helps you set an intention, you know, building this kind of Dagwood sandwich for a 3-year-old that they can't fit it in your mouth. You might not be able to deliver that upon that proclamation of anything about it was the best for that people. Because then it falls in that category of, you know, it might have been the greatest, but it wasn't either appropriate or what someone expected. And I think that's a whole nother conversation.
That's a great analogy. And that kind of shows the variable nature of cooking, that it's not just a cookbook and the words and you follow it and you experience success. There are so many other things, as you've mentioned, the place, the season, the ingredients that are available to you, and then the eaters that you're serving and what they're looking for. And I think that can become frustrating to people who just want to ingredients in and food out type of relationship with cooking.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's, you know, the book itself is an incredibly, I guess simple would be the easiest place to put it in, but I think I wanted to give people a place to start as far as it was my first public conversation with them. You know, maybe I'll do another book and we'll get, you know, more geeky complex. But I think, you know, it's a little bit like wine lists. I think sometimes, you know, we go to our go-to wines because we're afraid to say we don't know about certain things. And I just thought if you didn't have to ask me, but I could give you something which will really give you a basics of understanding how this can work, how this can work for you. And then you can fill it in with all the other great cookbooks that are out there that hopefully this can be a part of that. But just like me, I can't be everything for everybody. Definitely according to my wife, for sure. But I try to please her and my family and my friends and hopefully as many other people as I can.
You mentioned simplicity, and I see that kind of in some of your approach. And I think it's a very elegant simplicity. And that is what is so great about Italian pizza, is that it's simple in essence, but the simplicity doesn't mean it's not complex in terms of flavor. How do you, when you go about crafting a pizza, or what kind of advice would you give to a home cook to know, how do I keep it simple but keep the integrity of flavor without overwhelming the dish with too much?
Well, I think, you know, there's old, you know, you heard, you know, less is more. And I'll take it further and say sometimes less is still too much. Some of the most complex things I had were in the simplest form because they allow us to see it naked. You know, they allow us to see it without interruptions or, you know, under, you know, nine, you know, seven mother sauces in a barrage of things that we've never seen before, had no reference for. You know, there is something for, like, in my opinion, like when you're cooking something that people already have an opinion about, whether it's a bowl of pasta or pizza or a piece of fish, whatever. I love that study where we're going to go into deep what people like, you know, what people like about this certain item, and can we study its nuances to enhance it? Oh, so you like crispy? How can we make it crispier but still moist? Or, you know, where it correlates with pizza the best, I think, is, you know, one thing I didn't do in this book is, you know, things that we work on now. I mean, we do, you know, my brother's here right now. We're making some, you know, we have a little mill here. We're grinding some locally grown whole grains, Khorasan and spelt to do some great sourdoughs. And they're very intense in flavor and they're wonderful. You know, I think when you kind of get into flavors, whether it's, you know, the dough or a chili or a sauce, you know, we look at each one where, you know, a very basic, say pizza dough at maybe, say, 24 hours of fermentation time. Well, that's going to give you a certain characteristics of, you know, structure and flavor and development. I think you as a person that, as you like it, you know, as things change, as we all do, as they change in their complexities or flavor profiles, whether it's salinity or forward, you know, sour flavors or whatever, you know, you start to have to adapt what are the rest of the ingredients going to be. Like for me, for instance, I'm going to make a marinara, that I want that the pizza, first of all, to not be so far away from your original, like you never had one like this before. I want it to be familiar first. So I work from a point of familiarity, and then I'll go deep into, you know, looking at, you know, the salinity of the dough with flour varietal, fermentation, make sure that each one of those are in balance, make sure that I handled it properly, you know, during just hand stretching the dough. I let it, each proofing was done, you know, enough so I can manipulate it with the least amount of kind of tug of war with it. You know, my oven was proper temperature. You know, your garlic was sliced the last minute. You know, your olive oil was of the best quality. You know, where you salted it, you know, at the end, you know, maybe with Malden salt or your favorite, you know, large flake sea salt. You know, you did things that were familiar to you, but you started to study instead of putting more stuff on them. See how you could put that in balance first. And then when you start with that minimalism, feel free to go as crazy as that makes sense.
So starting with, you know, minimalism and thoughtfulness about each ingredient and then kind of playing from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you start where you are. I mean, you start with what you have, you know, which is always a good starting point. And then you know, download what you like. You know, we're in a lot of supersized world, unfortunately, still living, and we're bigger. You know, it was always better on the plate, and you know, more of something, more truffles, more whatever. And usually, maybe if you learn, when you learn to say, well, how much does something need? You know, like how much of this world of me does this world need? Probably not that much. You know, I'm good in for like 30 minutes, which is, you know, just enough for the show. But, you know, you don't want to hear my diatribe every day about this stuff. I think hopefully it can just spark an interest that allows you to say, well, that makes some sense to, or something about it makes some sense to me. Now I'll adapt that to some of my own convictions, and then, you know, we've got something going.
It's funny you mentioned the dough fermenting, because that is something that we learned from Caleb of Pizza Cleta, who counts you as his mentor in pizza. And that was something we started playing with on his suggestion when he was on the podcast. And we found a huge amount of difference in flavor, complexity of the dough. And so our favorite way is to let the dough rest for 3 days. And after that, it has this beautiful nutty flavor we just go crazy for.
Well, I love it. I mean, so even four, sometimes people like to go 4 or 5 when it starts to get some speckles from oxidation. And, you know, the book is really meant to give people, you know, it's a starter kit to freeing themselves, to just get back to the table, get back in the kitchen. You know, as, you know, people like my friends, like Caleb, will tell you, I'm always down to talk about how geeky people want to get into it. But I think to get geeky in things, you got to start with, you know, fundamentals, you know. And hopefully people get some fundamentals out of how to work with ingredients again.
Well, wow. I could sit here all day talking pizza. All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Right. It's been a true pleasure. Your book, Bianco, is just beautiful. And we will continue to follow along with you on Instagram as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's my only link to the outside world there. Thank you so much.
One thing that struck me from that interview with Chris is that he says less is more, that people are looking for an authentic experience, maybe a new way to look at a ingredient. They're not looking for something where the chef just says, I know everything and I'm throwing it at you. And it actually reminded me of a news story I just heard where a chain restaurant was trying to reach out to millennials, because we all need more millennials in our life. And they said millennials like sriracha, they like tacos, they like pork belly. How can we reintegrate our menu so we have all these things? Which I don't think is a bad idea. Except they tried putting all those things into a single menu item. So they ended up with like a 3-pig sandwich where it had like bacon and pork belly and ham or something like that.
And a taco.
And a taco and sriracha on top. And it turns out the millennials did not show up in droves. And they should have asked Chris first, and he would have told them, why don't you just pick that sriracha and build something great around it instead of trying to throw everything at it.
Yeah, I loved that train of thought of less is more. And it actually made me think about when you and I were in Naples, Alex. We decided we wanted to go in search of the best pizza in Italy.
And we had like 4 hours and we did it. Right. We had like 3 street pizzas and some really good pizza where we sat down.
I think we started at like 10 a.m. just loading our faces with pizza. But you would think that the best pizza in Italy would have so many different ingredients, like truffles and crazy stuff. But what we found was our favorite was a place called Da Michele. And they just have 2 pizza flavors. They have margherita and marinara. And that's all. And they put those out day in, day out. Hundreds of pizzas coming out of their wood-fired oven. And they have got it down to a T. The best margherita pizza that I've had before. And I think one of the things I loved about the experience was not only the pizza, not only just the perfect chew on the crust and the gooey mozzarella and just the savory, sweet red sauce and just one little basil leaf, But I just loved, we sat at these communal tables and we were sat next to an Italian gentleman and we just had a lovely conversation about life and we connected with this person we'd never met over pizza. And I think it's all about that experience. And then it's all about just doing something great. That's simple, doing it to the best of your ability.
And what we found is that when we come home with a recipe like that and we're all inspired, that's best not try to recreate the same thing because we don't have that same mozzarella or we don't have an oven that reaches 1100 degrees. And so you have to figure out what did you enjoy about that experience and try to recreate it and recreate something different.
Right. We have a favorite pizza flavor and I'll leave the recipe link in the show notes for all of you listening. But we had a pizza in Rome when we first went to Rome that had an egg on it. And we thought that was just the greatest thing, an egg on a pizza. And so we came home and decided to create a pizza with an egg. But instead of doing the pizza we had in Rome, we made it a white pizza so it doesn't have red sauce. We put some pecorino cheese on it, which is this very sharp version of a Parmesan cheese. And then we wilted some scallion greens to go over the top. And it's a really fun just to kind of play on that first pizza we had with an egg on it when we were on our honeymoon.
And I think another thing that's important there is that using the best ingredients that you have available, not just where you live, but what time of year. Like if it's February and you're buying basil, that basil is not as good as it is out of your garden in the middle of summer. So when it's February and you don't have any good basil, we would recommend trying something else. Like we have a kale pizza, which is available pretty much all time of the year.
Right. It has some red onion and pistachios. If you remember the interview, Chris talking about pistachios.
Find some good Arizona pistachios, apparently.
Right. But the crunch of the pistachios is really great against the kale, the red onion, and then a red sauce. So it's very simple, but has some really bold flavors.
And one final tip that we picked up from his cookbook was that all the different canned tomatoes out there have a little bit different salt content. Most of them have some salt, which isn't bad, but they're a little bit different. So if you're going to make a red sauce or a marinara, or to even just throw tomatoes straight on a pizza crust like we like to, taste them straight out of the can and say, do these need a bit more salt or do they need maybe not any added at all? Maybe I should cut back salt in the rest of my recipe because they're super salty. That you actually have to lead with your flavor profile that you're finding in those tomatoes and build around that. Don't just assume that a recipe says a quarter teaspoon of salt. That's what you need.
That's a great point. I love how he puts those instructions in his cookbook about tasting. And let me say one more thing that I learned was I hand crushed the sauce for our pizza.
What do you mean?
He recommends using whole tomatoes instead of diced or crushed tomatoes as the sauce. And he likes to crush them with his hands instead of putting them in a blender because the seeds can become kind of bitter tasting and when they're ground up. So I just squeezed those whole tomatoes and got tomato juice all over the place, all over myself. So make sure to put on an apron if you try that recipe.
Change out of your work clothes before starting this sauce recipe.
Well, I will put a link to those recipes in our show notes, including our dough recipe.
And teaser, our cookbook, Pretty Simple Cooking, out in February has our perfected pizza dough recipe, including that 3-day ferment that Sonia was talking about. So you can find some on our website that are perfectly delicious and wonderful pizza dough recipes. But if you head over to Amazon and pre-order Pretty Simple Cooking, the cookbook, you'll have our ultimate pizza dough recipe.
And I'll also place the link to Bianco, the book by Chris Bianco, Pizza, Pasta, and Other Food I Like. It's a fabulous book, and we will put a link to order that in the show notes as well.
So let us know your favorite pizza combinations or maybe a memory of a delicious pizza experience you had somewhere in the world. Or have you been to Bianco? Tell us over on Instagram @acouplecooks or Twitter or Facebook @acouplecooks.